On today's episode of Good Word, James Edwards from The Athletic joins me to discuss the crazy game Oklahoma City and Minnesota had last night, their big three. Anthony Edwards maybe coming up a little bit short. The Knicks and Pacers series, and unfortunately, we got to talk about some foul merchants. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. It is the day after Memorial Day. I am in Minneapolis because who's in a rush to go to Oklahoma City? We are joined today by my man, Flint's own James Edwards from The Athletic. He covers the New York Knicks. He is in Indianapolis for game four of the Eastern Conference Finals. We're going to get into that. Other than the fact that James is wearing a Red Wings hat and he would not be welcomed in Detroit. He's not tough enough to be a Detroiter. We
I'm a Detroit legend.
In your own mind.
Stop.
Appreciate you joining me, brother.
Anything for you.
I appreciate you, man. Anything starting from last night, the same way that a lot of people probably feel about the Knicks-Pacers series is the same way that I felt about Thunder-Timberwolves. Whoever wins game four wins the series. 128-126, incredible shot making by both teams. That was the best game I think probably either team has played, you know, in this series. Even, you know, just defense, like a complete game. There was no Anthony Edwards, Julius Randle sighting. It was a little weird, and I feel like we can get into that. But I want to start with Oklahoma City's big three. And I think it's at the point where we can call Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren a big three. They legit did everything down the stretch. They combined for 95. James, Chet Holmgren doesn't get any plays called for him, but still found a way to impact the game. And Jalen Williams, we said, if Oklahoma City's not going to go to the finals this year, it's going to be because Jalen Williams is not a bona fide second option. Check, check, check. They've answered all the questions now. And even though I think big threes are largely dead in the NBA, Oklahoma City has a big three, and they still have so much room to grow, which means it's curtains for the Western Conference.
It might be curtains for the NBA. Because the East ain't looking too tough after next season. So I think it was Ryan Rosillo who tweeted this, and I couldn't agree more. The Oklahoma City Thunder were the only team that were going to beat that Minnesota Timberwolves team last night. Like, Minnesota was really good. And OKC loaded up on the ball when Ant had it. Obviously, Julius struggled, but, I mean, Dante found his shot. Nall was incredible. It was a great basketball game. And Oklahoma City, like, I don't want to say that's, like, the best version that we could see, because while Shai was really good, he wasn't great. Right. I think he took 40 shots to get 30, but he was still really good.
The other way around, but, I mean, took 30 shots to get 40.
Yes, took 30 shots to get 40. What really, like, sealed the deal down the stretch is there was a few minutes where Shai went to the bench. They had J-Dub run the offense. They kept afloat. They kept ahead. And then Shai comes back in, and J-Dub just effortlessly flows into, like, a kick-out option, a second option, a weak side option, and still hit shots. Like, there's nothing you can do with that. When that dude is hitting shots, because there's nothing you can do with Shai, there's nothing nobody can do with Shai. If Chet's hitting shots like that, if J-Dub is hitting shots like that, like, it's impossible. Then Cason Wallace was getting big shots. Yeah. Isaiah Joe, to me, is one of the he doesn't get talked about. Like, he is one of the best shooters in basketball. Isaiah Joe is a tremendous 3-point shooter. Like, this team is just flawless. There's no flaws to them. They got the break speed off them in game three. You know what? It's the NBA. It happens. This is the Final Four. All four of these teams are really good. The fact that they responded in this manner, where Minnesota could never quite get over the hump. They hit a crazy shot. Oklahoma City hit a crazy shot. Like, that was a championship effort last night that only, I think, and as Ryan Rosillo said, that only one team in the NBA could have beaten that Minnesota Timberwolves team last night, and it was the team that they played against.
Yeah, it was the weird thing, I don't know if you felt this way. It felt like Oklahoma City, as close as the game was, and granted, Oklahoma City had moments where they were up double digits, but it didn't go further than that. It didn't go like to from 10 to 15. But I never felt, James, that Oklahoma City was never in control. You know, it felt like even though Minnesota was stalking, it seemed like Oklahoma City would respond with a big shot, respond with a big stop, get an offensive rebound, do something to sort of quell whatever momentum or energy that Minnesota was trying to gin up. And that's like a maturity thing, like recognizing this possession is big, this moment is big, let's make sure that we hunker down. We did not concentrate as much as we should have in game three. We got our doors blown off. Let's tighten up. And they played really good defense. Like, I want to talk, James, I want to see how you rock with me on this, because we can talk about the officiating. We can talk, there were a couple of, you know, calls here and there. Whatever, those things happen in the playoffs. But the way that Oklahoma City loaded up on Anthony Edwards and said, you're not going to beat us. I've never seen Ant look confused. I've seen him tired before. I've seen him exhausted before. I've never seen Anthony Edwards like confused in a way that takes away his aggressiveness. They loaded up and said, no, you're going to hit shots. Dante DiVincenzo, you're going to hit shots. Cool. Those are the terms in which we are accepting. But we're not going to accept Ant, you scoring 40, or Julius Randle, you scoring 40. And I just feel like that's a mark of a mature ball club.
I agree 100% with you. Even to the point of, kind of, that was a mature win last night. Like, I think when we sit down and watch the Oklahoma City documentary 15, 20 years from now, the amount of emphasis those players are going to recall about that Denver series that they just had, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oklahoma City went from boys to men in that Denver series. Even though they were vastly more talented across the board than Denver, though they were the favorites to win, that was a championship team on the other side with the 1B best player in the world, 1A best player in the world, whatever you want to call it. And they found a way to win. And I think what we saw last night was a continuation of a group that is just, they've entered that echelon of, we're no longer the young team that's learning how to win. We're the young team that's like about to make your lives hell for the next decade. And the way they loaded up on Ant, like there was a hand within 5 inches of him, any dribble he took. Like there was somebody, if they weren't right in front of him, there was somebody within striking distance. And it's not just like 5 NBA players alone on the court, good defender, bad defenders, like is a lot when they're focusing in on you. 5 dogs all at once. Yeah. Like Oklahoma City never has a terrible defender on the floor. Like they have great to good at minimum all the time. And I thought Ant played well. I thought he let, and to quote Tom Thibodeau, he let the game come to him. He got his teammates involved. I think the issue is, for as tremendous as Julius Randle has been this playoffs, even before the playoffs, like since he came back from the injury, things didn't go well from him at the start, and he kind of just faded in the game. And Julius, as an observer, tends to do that when things don't go well early. He could get lost in the sauce throughout the course of a game, and I just didn't think he added. They needed him to add just a little bit more, and he wasn't able to do that. I thought Ant did his part, given that the way the defense guarded him.
It's weird. Like, put it like this. Do you want to, and I'm giving you the option here, do you want to continue with Oklahoma City Big Three, or should we go and talk about the Ant part of this? We can leave the Ant part on the back end, because I don't want to just go back and forth. But you tell me where we want to go here.
Because I don't love how I feel like a lot of media at times focuses on the losing team. Let's go to the team that won. It might be it's Oklahoma City. It's not Anthony Edwards, whatever. Oklahoma City won. They're the best team in the NBA. Let's talk about them.
Yes. Okay. So this is why I wanted to say that. I legit think that big threes are dead. I think when you look at the CBA and the aprons and everything else, if you've got one player on a big boy max, which Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is on, it's going to be really incumbent on you to draft really well. Almost like in football, where if you got a quarterback on a big deal, then you've got to hit on your draft picks, because that is your title window. with Oklahoma City, they're able to have this big three because 23 and 22. Like, those are the ages of Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, or 24 and 23, excuse me. Like, they're still so very young and not at a max sort of status yet. Jalen Williams is probably going to be all NBA, you know, so those mechanisms start kicking in. But, James, everybody's looking for big threes, and I don't know if they should. Oklahoma City drafted theirs. And yep. This whole Sam Presti, you know, rebuild thing, he hit on the right picks after getting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And we're seeing all of this come to fruition. Chet Holmgren is nowhere near where he should be. Jalen Williams is probably nowhere near where he should be, you know, where he's going to be later. And they're winning right now, and they all seem to sort of fit perfectly within this. Like Chet Holmgren last night, every shot that he hit was not like a clutch traditional shot, James. It mm-hmm. was like, yep. we're up two, now we're up five. We're up three, now we're up six. We're up five, now we're up seven. Like, those are things that you can't, like, teach. And maybe it's the experience from the Denver series, but I feel like they're playing so much more free, and it starts with those three guys.
I agree, and I'm actually a bit surprised at how the one thing I had questions left about this team is they haven't played this deep and this intense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like would their legs hang up? And there's times you look at Shai, like he don't even look like he's sweating. Like that team is, they're so mature. But to your point, I'm fascinated to see how this team, I agree with you, big threes are dead. Sam Presti, as now we can really give him his flowers because they're going to make the NBA Finals. I thought a lot of that stuff was premature. We needed to see what happened. This team is going to the Finals, and I think everybody thinks that they will probably win the Finals comfortably, no matter who it's up against, right? Barring injury. But with that said, I'm so fascinated to see how the players of today's game handle this second apron stuff and these only so much room for max players. Like, I think with the emphasis with how the media has driven, and we're media, even though I think we handle ourselves a little bit differently, as many other media members do, not just us, but winning is so important, right? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like the grass always greener mentality, right? So what if Presti doesn't want to give J-Dub the max at some point, but like the Clippers do? If you're Jalen Williams, is $150 million bad in Oklahoma City as opposed to $200-plus million in L.A. where the taxes cut it down to similar anyway? Like, do guys start thinking about stuff like this? And, like, it's not always going to be, like, I can go and get my bag, but, like, what do I want to win? And it just feels like a lot of players of today's game, this younger generation that grew up on Kobe specifically, like, they do want to win. So I'm fascinated to see how that plays out from the player perspective, because like you said, they can't give J-Dub and Chet the max, and we both assume that they're heading in the right direction of being max contract players.
Right.
But do they take a little bit less to make sure that they prioritize winning? Like, that's going to be the greatest test case, because like you said, those guys are so young. Like kind of like a Jalen Brunson deal in New York, right? Like they don't, I mean, people could say they have a big four or a big five or like whatever, like they have a really good starting lineup, but it's different. Yeah, I'm fascinated to see how that plays out from the player perspective and how they handle it and prioritize winning over just trying to get a bag and going to maybe a worse situation.
Brother, you still got to live in Oklahoma City. I don't care what else it is, who you're playing for. You still got to live in Oklahoma City. I am not looking forward to having to spend 10 days in Oklahoma City. It ain't got nothing to do with market size. It is, oh my Lord, what are we doing here, right?
There's some good food there.
I'm not a barbecue person.
Yeah, you're not. That's true. That's true. You're not.
I'm not a barbecue person. So it's a couple of decent restaurants there, but more like
some good burger spots there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that ain't really my jam at this stage of my life. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to hang out in Oklahoma, in Bricktown, for 10 straight days. Whatever. Now, I'll tell you this, James.
Shout out to Bricktown, though. It is a nice hotels in Bricktown.
Yeah, whoop-de-damn-do, right? I'll tell you this. I have to recalibrate my thinking on this particular big three. Like, you look at the Lakers are looking for a big three. Your Knicks are looking for a big three. You know, Milwaukee was trying to, you know, cobble together a big three on the back end. And we've seen how it happened, right? I thought Oklahoma City's big two was going to be Shea and Chet. Right. I thought Chet,
agreed,
as the 7-foot matchup problem, I didn't care about him being skinny man and everything. I was like, that's a battle between him and Big Victor. Right. Like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an area that only they can sort of operate in. Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's a dog. He's confident as all hell. Like there's a personality and an edge to him that I don't think that we get a chance to see because they're Oklahoma City and the Thunder don't want anyone seeing anything. Right. Whatever. But yeah. I thought their evolution was going to be fully actualized because Chet emerged into being the second guy. But he's not the second guy, not because he's not good enough, but because Jalen Williams is like, oh, it's the fourth quarter, I'm going to score 14. Or it's the first quarter, Shea hasn't gotten it going, I'm going to take the game to Anthony Edwards and score double figures here. Like, there's a mastery in figuring out, James, where your openings are.
Yeah.
In the course of the game, like reading the game and figuring out, oh, nobody has it going, or I'm going to take the game and you guys can sort of figure it out, you know, on the back end of me. That's the part I didn't see coming this soon. Because with how Jalen Williams played last year in the second round, you're not supposed to have this end over end, year over year, that level of evolution.
Right. No, I think you make a great point. And just to bring it back to our world, Troy Weaver, when he was in Detroit, he always used to say, we draft people, not the players. And I think that was that's a big moniker in Oklahoma City where he came from.
Yep. Yep.
And you know what? Nobody looks more proud of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander than J-Dub. Mm-hmm. Nobody looks more proud of J-Dub than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Nobody looks more proud of Chet than those two. Like, there's no egos. There's no people. You don't ever see J-Dub have his hands up because Shai's dribbling. He knows Shai's dribbling because it's going to end in 2 points. So that allows you to have that. And I agree with you. Finding your spots is one of the hardest things to do in team building and throughout the flow of a game. But I think when you have personalities like that, it makes it a lot easier. Like Shai is aware enough to know he wasn't playing well in the first quarter and he trusts J-Dub enough to go. And like, I think that comes back to like, as in like, of course the players have to be good, but if you have two talented players, one's a knucklehead, and he may be a notch better. If the knucklehead's a 10 and the other player's a 9, but he's a good dude, give me the 9 that's a good dude, because that's going to have a ripple effect throughout the team building in basketball. And I feel like this team has a bunch of 10s, a bunch of 10s and 9s that are good dudes, and they're all dogs. They all play hard, man. Like, there ain't a soft, like, you people can act like like people think Shai's soft. Shai ain't soft. Like, that, there is not a soft player on Oklahoma City.
No.
They absolutely nailed every aspect of team building in putting this team together. And I thought last night was the perfect, like, the epitome of what they were building was a tremendous basketball game where they defended at a high level, had elite shot making, and never let the other team, despite it always being a two possession game down the stretch, nobody ever watched that and was like, Minnesota's going to get over the hump. I don't think so, unless you're a Minnesota fan, which you should.
Right. Here's the other part of that. And this is the part we talk about Ant. This is where you realize Anthony Edwards is 23 years old. And that's not to say that anything was premature, because that's going to be the conversation. Oh, did we crown Ant too soon? And some people were really puzzled by his performance. I thought he was merely confused. I think he saw some defenses last night that he hadn't really seen before. And we have to give those type of players the space to grow. Like, yeah, LeBron, when he was 23, was carrying the Cavs to the NBA Finals. Kevin Durant, when he was 23, was carrying the Thunder to the NBA Finals. Anthony Edwards is 23, but like 6'5". And there's a difference between being 6'5 and 6'9 and 6'11 and all those things. Like, there's a growing process that he's going to have to sort of see. James, part of that is going to be playing with your back to the basket. Part of that is going to be being able to force the game. I feel like he took what the game gave him as opposed to him dictating the terms. And because he never got in the rhythm early, it was going to be really hard for him to find one late. I'm not going to criticize him. I'm going to say we expected a lot out of a 23-year-old. Because when Shai is 26 now, if Shai was where Anthony Edwards is right now 3 years ago, that he'd be having the exact same problem. So I don't think we are premature in anything. I just think it just shows how hard this is.
And I think people forget, well, you just named Kevin Durant and LeBron, but how old were they when they won, right? How old was Jordan when he finally won, right?
28.
We're talking 26, 27, 28, 27, 28. Like, you need these moments. Shai and them had this last year. This is what they went through. Like, Ant's going to be better because of this. Now, will he have the window that some of these other guys have had? I don't know, because OKC ain't going nowhere. So,
right,
if he can find a way to get past, like, just because, and I think we have to make this, I want to make this clear at least. He's losing to the best team that we have seen in quite some time. It's not like they're struggling with the faulty Nuggets, right? Like, and credit to Oklahoma City, they were a 7-game series. Like, I don't mean that as a knock to the Nuggets, but I think if Minnesota was playing Denver, we would expect Minnesota to win.
Yes.
Nobody came into this expecting, I don't think, Minnesota to beat Oklahoma City. This is one of the greatest teams we've seen in quite some time with no flaws. And you know what? Ant just beat them by 42. Ant just took him down to the wire, even though we both thought that the Oklahoma City was always going to win. Like, that was a great basketball game. Like, there's no shame.
Yes, it was.
There's no shame in losing to the best team. Like, somebody has to win it, and it's usually the best team. Like, and I agree with you. These are learning experiences. He's only 23. I forget that myself. And, man, the best of the best don't win until they're 27, 28. Like, I think we have to keep reminding people that every year as we try to anoint the next great star.
Look, when Michael Jordan was 23 years old, I'm not saying he's Michael or anything, because it's just a point of reference for those who don't necessarily know history in that way. We just see the fully actualized versions of said player. When Michael Jordan was 23 years old, that's the, like, Air Jordan 2 era, y'all. That's like Super Mario 2. Yeah, we never played Super Mario. We remember Super Mario 1. We remember Super Mario 3. Super Mario 2, that was like, I don't know about that one, right? I don't know about you. I didn't play that one much. I wasn't trying to beat that game. That game was like, what the hell is this?
That was just a little before my time, but I know the reference. Gosh. I know what you mean.
Did I just date myself?
You hate you. A little bit, yeah. I'm 92.
My bad.
I was born in 92. Yeah, yeah.
I'm born in 84. All right, yeah. There was that. But when Michael Jordan was 23 years old, and he was at his age 23, 24 season, that was the, I'm averaging 30, 35, 37, but I'm on a losing team. Like, he had just come back from the foot injury and scored 63 in the Celtics. So he was just getting his shit off. He wasn't in a winning situation. He was in a, I got to get mine, you got to get yours sort of era. And then the next year was the, I'm averaging 35, MVP, defensive player of the year, all of that stuff. And by all measures, is ahead of the curve in so many ways. Getting the two conference finals at such a young age. You ran into Luka last year. You're running into Shai this year. You just happen to be learning your lessons at a very early sort of step where we're ready to push the fast forward button. And I won't say fair is the right word, but I don't think it's realistic to expect him to have the on-floor maturity that you can only get through experience.
I agree. And I just pray, as a basketball fan, as somebody who gets tired of, like, these narratives, and for Anthony's case, that, like, if he doesn't win by the time he's 26 or 27, like, I hope people just chill. Like, I hope there's nobody 2 years from now, like, Ant doesn't have one. Fam, he's 25. And I feel like we're heading toward that way based on how we talk in this space. But, like, it took Tatum and Brown until they were 26, 27, 28 to figure it out, right? Like, that's just, you have to go through stuff, man. And it's not always linear. Like, there's going to be probably a disappointing year for Minnesota in between now and Ant's age 28 year. Like, that's the nature of the beast. It happens. But this dude is as talented as there is in the NBA. He's already added stuff to his game at 23, mm-hmm. coming back and shooting the three at the clip that he has. We see him learning the processing of being a guy at the highest level. We saw that last night. Like, he was tremendous as a processor. So let's just give him, like, time, man. Like, the dude is ridiculously good. He's insanely good. He's just going up against the best team we've seen since the 72-win Warriors. Like, it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
73-win Warriors, sorry.
No, it's, they won 68 games, y'all. And yeah. And they've had 60 wins, regular season and playoffs, by double figures. Like, this is one of the great regular season playoff runs we've seen. I just think it's been kind of skewed, A, because it's Oklahoma City, B, because they played a second round 7-game series against Denver and barely came out of that. But this is one of those, these are one of those ones, right? We say, yeah, he's one of the ones. No, this team is one of those ones. When we come back, though, we got to talk about who Oklahoma City is likely going to play in the NBA Finals. Welcome back to The Good Word, here with James Edwards of The Athletic. James, of course, is in Naptown, where it's, you know, nothing to do but sleep. And if you like shrimp cocktail, which I am not a fan of, I like my food cooked. I don't need my food raw. You know what I mean? Like, all right, whatever. Yeah, Indiana Pacers still up 2-1 on the Knicks, game 4 later tonight. By the time some of you hear this, the game will already have happened. Come and tell us what happened. James, did the Knicks find something in game 3 on the road, down 20, staring down the barrel of, you know, we go down 3-0. Everybody got questions. Did Tibbs discover something? Oh, looking over, there's DeLon Wright. I didn't know I had him on my roster, and he can play 10 minutes in a pinch. Or is this just a delay of execution?
So I'm always going to give, even in collapses, you got to give the team that came back credit, and you have to break down what went wrong with the other team. Those two, there's no, the team that's up 20 didn't still play well and lost the lead. That's not how it happens. So
right.
You have to give credit and talk about the other side. So I think from a New York perspective, the biggest thing I take away from, if I'm Tibbs, that I seriously chew on, and the DeLon Wright stuff, like, that lineup was mixed and matched together. It worked, right? It helped because Deuce mm-hmm. McBride got hot in that lineup, and Landry Shamet got a charge in a three. Like, he did just enough, right? But I'm still not convinced that DeLon plays if Jalen's not in foul trouble. Now, credit to Tibbs for going to the third option, which is DeLon over Campaign, who had been struggling as of late, right? Like, so he gets credit for that without question. But I think if you're Tibbs, the one thing that you have to kind of chew on going into to game 4 is, are we better? Do I need to stagger Jalen and Cat more?
That's where I was going, but go ahead.
I think if you look at the Knicks' biggest issues, I'm very careful about how I say it. Jalen and Cat, and I want to talk about Jalen specifically, they give effort defensively for the most part, specifically Jalen. They are two limited defenders. There's only so much that they can do mm-hmm. given their mm-hmm. limitations physically and whatever. And that has been the Knicks' Achilles heel. Like, Josh Hart didn't get benched for Josh Hart reasons. Josh Hart got benched because they needed a back line for their two star offensive players.
Right.
The Knicks have to try to minimize having Cat and Brunson from a defensive standpoint on the floor as much as they had during the regular season in the playoffs. That's what I think. If you're Tibbs, you try to, okay, do we need to lean into this a little bit more? Because if we could get four good to great defenders around one of them at all times, aside from the start of the first and the start of the third, Does that improve our chances of not being down 20 and being in games? Does that improve our chances of getting out to a good lead and maintaining that? I think that's the biggest thing you have to chew on if you're Tibbs.
The thing that fascinates me about the Cat Brunson thing, you're looking at it defensively, and I'm 100% with you. It's a problem when you have a point of attack defensive problem, and then you have a problem at the rim, right? Like, those are the two most critical places defensively. Even the wings can only do but so much, because once you're in 1-5 pick and roll, those guys are in help. So their impact is going to be limited. I'm talking about OG Anunoby. I'm talking about Mikal Bridges. Really, two really good defenders. At least I think OG Anunoby is an exceptional defender. Mikal Bridges, I think, used to be a really good defender. I think now he's capable, right?
He fluctuates, yeah.
Yes. For me, though, offensively, James, when I look at where Karl Towns takes his shots, they're at the same exact spots where Jalen Brunson takes his shots. And yeah. I don't know if you can have both players whose sweet spots are in the exact same place, because you're both trying to get there. Karl knows he wants to take slightly left of the top of the key. Not quite the wing, slightly there, right? He wants to take those threes. He wants to take those shots, pull the defense out, and your floor has to be balanced elsewhere. So Jalen Brunson can't be standing right next to him. And Jalen Brunson, if Jalen Brunson goes to the block, because he's basically a 6'1" power forward, you're probably apt to let Jalen Brunson sit there in single coverage offensively. You're not going to draw the mismatch. You're not going to get the swing. Karl isn't going to get the shot, those type of shots. And if Carl's not engaged offensively, we know he's going to be lunch on defense. So that's, to me, is offensively where you have to decide, do we need to stagger these two guys as minutes? Because when Jalen got in foul trouble in game three and was sitting, Karl was the guy who brought him back, and Karl hit the entire floor to play with. It wasn't just those threes. It was, Karl driving down the lane for a layup. Karl driving down the lane and dunking. You know what I mean? But he had the freedom to play, and he wasn't always looking for Jalen Brunson to dribble the air out the ball.
I think, to your point about Karl's stretch, and this is to the Indiana perspective of this, why I still feel like Indiana's in the driver's seat is some of the decisions Carlisle made, some of the decisions they made as a team were just like really kind of head scratching. So if you look, and maybe I'm misremembering, but I feel like we know the book is out. Do not put traditional centers on Cat.
Mm-hmm.
You put a strong guard or a strong wing on him, and you force him to take tough shots. You force him to drive into traffic. During that run, it was Miles Turner and Tony Bradley on Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, Carlisle has to match up at this point Siakam's minutes with Cat. I think we're at the end of the road. Like, if you got to play 45 minutes, you got to play 45 minutes. Like,
right,
specifically
right.
Pascal Siakam. And then there was stuff like Jalen has four or five fouls. Halliburton calls for a screen to get Brunson switched on him. And then Miles Turner screens Brunson to get somebody else on Halliburton, when it's like, no, you want Halliburton on Brunson. You don't rescreen again. Like, that's defeating the purpose. So,
right.
I just thought Indiana made some really boneheaded decisions late in that game they just weren't sharp. And that was across the board. Now, I think they cleaned some of that stuff up. If they're going to continue to guard Turner with Cat, like, good luck to them. Miles Turner is a good defender. He's just a little too slow-footed for Cat. He plays a little too aggressively, and Cat can just get past him.
And he's better in help, I feel like, than he is on the ball.
And he's better in help. He's better in help than he is on the ball. You bring him out to the three-point line, he's not as nimble. So I think Indiana has some stuff that they look at in film like, damn, we really did this? And they're going to walk away from game four a little bit more sharp. They're probably not going to shoot 5 of 25 from three again. But also, the Knicks need to get something from Mikal more consistently. They need to keep – Brunson has to stay out of foul trouble. I think Indiana walked away from game three like annoyed that they lost that and could have put the series to bed. But I think they walk away from that like, if we just clean these things up, we should be all right. And if you're New York, it's like, well, we've continued to find ways to win, and we're probably the more talented team. So maybe we stagger these guys a little bit and we'll see what happens. So I still think Indiana's in the driver's seat, just because I think their issues from game three are easier to clean up than it is for Cat to go for 20 in the fourth again.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's almost like when New York was up 2-0 on Boston, we came in and they said, Vinny, go to New York because this is going to be big. And it turned out that Boston blew their doors off. And then what we knew what happened later on with Jason Tatum, you know, tearing his Achilles and everything else. But we said going into game three of that series, New York better win game three. Because if they don't, yeah, you're going to wake a monster. Now we're saying it in the reverse, I believe, about the Pacers. Y'all better win game four or else home court gets flipped again. The Knicks regain everything that they lost from the first two games. Like, legit, the Tyrese Halliburton stuff, the choking, the theater, all that becomes null and void if you blow game four. That's why I believe Indiana has to win game four. Not that they can't go and win in the Garden again. I just think emotionally, I think one thing we've learned through these playoffs is emotion is not an endless supply. Some teams only have so much to give. And if you live off of that, you're going to wind up dying off of that. And I think New York, we're seeing that a little bit with the Knicks coming off that Celtics series. They played that series so much off of emotion that it took them a minute to, lack of a better phrase, you going and hanging out with a woman, you go home to your wife, you smelling like somebody else. The Knicks were still smelling like the Celtics.
Yeah.
They didn't realize, oh, we playing somebody else now. We got this other woman's perfume on us.
Right. That's a great analogy.
Don't take that literally, y'all. Don't go report me to my girlfriend or nothing like that. Don't get me in no trouble. No. It's just an analogy.
Yeah, he's a wholesome man. He's a wholesome man.
Exactly.
That is a great analogy. I actually asked Jalen this yesterday, Monday. What's today? Tuesday? Monday. Like, have you... I just asked him to kind of describe, like, there's a physical and emotional, or a physical and a mental toll that it takes to even get to this point, just in general, no matter how your series go to this. They've played two normal basketball games out of 16. There wasn't a normal basketball game in Detroit. They had gone into the fourth quarter down in most of those. Even if people want to say game one when they won by 13, they were down until campaign scored, 14 in the fourth or something like that? And then every other game was decided by 2 or 3 points or 5 points, right? Like, there was not a normal basketball game in that series. Boston, they came back from 20 in game one and game two. They got the breaks beat off of them in game three. They beat the breaks off Boston in game, no. Game no, they came back from double thing. Digits in game four.
Yep.
Yeah. Boston beat the brakes off them in game five.
Yep.
Is that right? And then the Knicks beat the brakes off Boston in game six. Like, and then game one in Indy, the craziest ending we've seen of crazy endings in the postseason. Game two was a little bit more normal. Indy was probably the better team and won that one. And then the other night, coming back from 20. So there's an emotional toll of always playing in games like that. Now it makes you stronger because you know you can win those. But that takes a toll on you. So I'm with you. I'm so tired of trying to predict Knicks stuff because it's just been absurd. I think whoever wins game four wins the series.
Yep.
Because I don't want to say the Knicks aren't good enough to win three before the Pacers win one. I don't want to say that. The Pacers are too good for another team to win three before they win one. I want to say that. But then it's like, okay, if the Knicks tie it up, they barely win in the Garden. They struggle in the Garden.
They don't win in the Garden.
So it's like,
they don't win in the Garden. Yeah.
So it's weird. Like, I'm going to say, like, I think who wins tonight wins the series. If Indy wins tonight, or if Indy wins in game four, they definitely win the series. If New York takes the two games in Indy, I feel like they will win the series. But I also, like, they haven't played great in the Garden either. So it's just so weird to predict with this team.
I think it's hard for people to, and I say this all the time, concentration is a skill. Concentration mixed with fatigue and emotion makes it even a tougher task, especially at this stage. You're playing every other day, then you're traveling in between. And it's not just regular basketball, it's high intensity basketball. And you lose something. Like you said, you gain something, maybe the knowledge and belief, oh, we can come back from being down 20. But that also lulls you into this space of maybe some laziness, because you're so damn tired. I'll get to it later. We'll handle them later. Give me these 5 minutes to sleep, and then we'll turn it on later. And that becomes a very dangerous thing. And I think the one thing about these playoffs as a whole, it's been so emotional. Like this entire thing from the Clippers were playing Denver in the first round. That series was one of, think about that. That was 2 rounds ago. It feels like 2 months ago because so much has happened since then. Even New York, Detroit feels like 2 months ago, even though we can memorize, oh, remember that Tim Hardaway shot, you know, the foul that wasn't, and Jalen Brunson on Ausar Thompson. That feels like a world ago because you have so many things that happen every damn day. And we're only in the conference finals. How much do you have left to give? And if you have nothing left to give, you're going to wind up in a space where you're down 2-1 and you might find yourself down 20 again.
The league is in such a great place, man. Like, I've been a fan of this league my entire life. I'm not sure I've had more fun. Like, taking off my reporter hat, because it's not fun being up at 2 a.m. and having to catch a 7 a.m. flight. Like, I'm tired. But as a basketball fan, even just the games I'm covering as a basketball fan, there's so much good talent. There's so many, the three-point shot has allowed the game to have such major swings. Like, there's teams on the rise. There's teams kind of patched together a little bit, like New York, who are, like, figuring it out on the fly and are, like, they don't have like the greatest chemistry in the world, but like the fact that they're here without it is still insane. Like, there's just so much good stuff going on. And I'm tired of people saying, like, I mean, it's funny when people say the Thunder and Pacers NBA Finals would be on the Discovery Channel. Like, that's a funny joke. But are you telling me that, like, if that's the finals, the Pacers offense against Oklahoma City defense wouldn't be some of the best basketball we would be able to watch? Like, what are we talking about? Like, that's as good of a style of play as you could get. Like, I don't know, man. Like, any four of these teams in the, like, New York and Minnesota with all that history, like, what are we talking about? Like, there's so much like good and great basketball, and this playoffs is really, like, if I'm the NBA, I'm just like making a bunch of commercials off this playoffs alone.
Yeah, we gonna look, slow your roll on that Oklahoma City Indy final. That would be the all sundown town NBA final. We'll be back with the last word. It's time for the last word here with James Edwards from The Athletic. James, I just literally just thought about this a few seconds ago because I remember people were like kind of pissed at the ending of the great game that was Oklahoma City and Minnesota last night. Mm-hmm. Because of the coaching strategies of you're up three, you foul. People were like, that you don't, from a strategic standpoint, you understand it. From an entertainment standpoint, from a compelling standpoint, from a theater standpoint, you want a team to be able to decide a game on their terms. Are you someone who says, man, that should be a take foul? Or is that just a part of the game that you cannot legislate out?
I think it's too hard to legislate out, because I was thinking about this the other day, or last night when I was watching, like, what could you do to fix it, right? And a couple things that came to my mind. Okay, you get rid of, in the final minute, in the fourth quarter, you get rid of the bonus. Like, the bonus is fine. If your team's in the bonus up until that final minute, that's fine. They're at the line. But inside that final minute, you get rid. But then it's like, teams will still just foul just to, like, make sure a player can't get off a good three, right? Then, like, the other way I was thinking about it was, do you give them a free throw in the ball? Like, maybe that's like the best way. So, like, you shorten, like, the gap file of the 3-point. Yeah, exactly. So you turn a 3-point game into a 2-point game if they make the free throw, and then they get the ball back and then you're not fouling up three. That's probably the best way to go about it. I just tend to, like, I can be old, as you know, I can be an old head sometimes. Just don't be down three.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, let's just, either lead the game or don't be down three. I don't know.
No, that I tend to be with you. And I think you can't, everything can't be legislated by the league or by the refs or whatever the case may be. And it got me to thinking, because we could have the Foul Merchant Finals. We could, in theory, have the Foul Merchant Finals. Oklahoma City and New York. No, I'm just curious. I'm curious from a standpoint of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who, from a number standpoint, does not go to the line nearly as much as we think he does. You know what I'm saying? Just from a pure number standpoint.
Yep.
The aesthetic, I think, is what gets people riled up. Like, when you see the camera angles and you see, oh, he hooked the arm. He hooked the arm. And then as soon as there's contact, he falls to the floor. You see the same thing to some degree with Jalen Brunson. Do you think that is gamesmanship to some degree? Or do you think that is sort of, you're trying to rig the game and you're not playing it with, I won't say integrity is the right word, but, you know, ethical hoops is now the term that we use on Twitter and all those social spaces.
Yeah. Listen, I think there are, well, let me say this about Shai. They fouled the shit out of Shai last night. Like, no, that jump shot at the end where Nickeil Alexander-Walker's doing this, and then you see the bench, you hit him in the forearm. Like, you fouled him. Now, I will say there's the one where he was trying to get past Ant, and Ant kind of slightly bumped him and he fell to the ground. Like, okay, that's annoying. Like, that one, like...
Yes, those like, are the plays that get on annoying. My nerves.
Yeah, that's the only ones that are like, we don't necessarily need those. Are they fouls? Probably. But, like, I leave that to ref discretion. Like, it's not even, I don't blame Shai. Like, the game is the game. Do we get, like, for example, you talk about trying to get over on the game. Barry Bonds was walked all the time. Is there a penalty for walking a great baseball hitter? No. Is there a penalty? Do we get annoyed when the quarterback tries to get the defensive end to jump with a fake, with a hard count? Like, it's all kind of somewhat in the same vein. I think that there's a weird narrative about the NBA that we don't have enough time to get into on this podcast right now. And there's just like this narrative. The short version is there's this narrative that like NBA players are soft. It's rooted in something probably deeper, but like, it's you part can
say
of the game.
It's rooted in. You can say it is rooted in racism. All right, cool. Let's move on. It's rooted in racism. There we go.
Yeah, it feels rooted in a bit in racism. And
Vinny said it, not James.
It does feel. It feels rooted in racism. I mean, they're soft. Like, you can't touch them. But it's like, it's the game. Like, there's rules. Like, if I'm playing video games, and my boy can't stop the run, I'm going to keep running the ball. You can't stop it. So, like, if you get contact, it's on the ref's discretion. They need to fix rules then. It's not like I sit there and feel like Shai's, like, every single play trying to draw contact. Like, it's not like I feel like my viewing experience is bad watching Shai Gilgeous. I feel like largely my viewing experience is awesome when I watch the Oklahoma City Thunder play. For Jalen Brunson, he's 6'1". Not the fastest, and guys, because he's so small, they play physical with him. What is he supposed to do? Just allow them to, like, he's got to bait them into being overly aggressive. He has to use their inertia, their force against them. And it's like, some guys just have to play with a strategic approach in mind because of their size, right? Like, Steph shoots threes because Steph was not the biggest, not the strongest, and not the quickest. He wasn't getting to the hole like that, as a kid coming up. He wasn't the Anthony Edwards athletically gifted. He had to find other ways to impact the game. Jalen Brunson, because he's a smaller guard, has guys play against him very aggressively. He has to use that force against him. You could call it foul baiting. You can call it whatever you want. I don't think Jalen has been as bad, anywhere near as bad as he was in, what was it, game 3 against Detroit?
Oh, yeah, he was terrible.
Was that game 3 or 2?
It was game 2. Both of those games, yeah.
And he'll tell you that was him. He was he was just frustrated. Jalen hasn't had, there hasn't been anything close to that since people will call a foul merchant gate. That was frustrated in the moment, that game specifically. So I'm not against it. I understand people's frustration with it, but yell if somebody's trying to do a hard count and drop and get a defensive end off sides too.
I will say this. When it looks like you're not trying to make a basketball play.
Fair.
When it looks like you are someone like the James Harden move, where someone has their arm out in defensive position, you initiate contact and then you grab their arm, hook it under and start doing the tango dance. Yeah. I got issue with that. Yep. When you know what I mean? And if you know when I fall, I'm going to draw contact. Like Shea fell down two plays in a row and I felt like he was trying to trick the referees two plays in a row.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like you said, he said efficiency be damned. I'm taking 30 shots to score these 40 points because I'm doing whatever it takes to win. So I understand and can appreciate both ends. I just feel like when gamesmanship becomes a little too heavy, it becomes strategy. It becomes, like I said, insurance fraud, wrapping your car around a tree and saying somebody else did it. That's where it doesn't look seemly to me because you're too good for that. But yeah. It's not done as often as people say. It's just when it's done, our eyes are trained to be like, man, that's that's all.
Right. And also, the only stuff we hear about people complain, like, the only thing we hear hot takey complaints from coaches and players after is fouls. So everybody then emphasizes that, right? Like, that's just like, they had 30 fouls to our 10, or he shot 58 free throws and our team shot 10. Like, that's when the hot take, like, that's why we emphasize that. The only thing I really have issue with when it comes to foul baiting is the defender gets in the air on a 3-point shot and the offensive player leans into him. Like, I feel like the league was trying to cancel that and they just don't do it. They just kind of stopped enforcing that. I don't know. That's not a natural basketball move to me.
Right.
Sometimes it is. Right.
Try to make the shot. But yeah, we just went on the look. We like physicality. We like the way that the playoffs have been officiated. By and large, I have zero problem with the refs letting a lot of stuff go. Let me say that before people go and lose their damn minds. So I don't think James is saying that he doesn't like the way the game is officiated. I know I'm not saying I don't like the way the game is officiated. I like the physicality. It's a different sport, and I like the fact that this is a different sport than March basketball or November basketball. Like, it's been great. Yeah. So that is my man James Edwards from The Athletic. Don't forget to check him out at The Athletic. It covers the New York Knicks. Anything else you need to plug, James?
No, nothing crazy. Just check out the Knicks coverage at The Athletic. I got a story up if you're looking for something to read before Game 4 on Karl Anthony Towns' performance on Dominican's Mother's Day and how important that was for him. So, there'll be coverage. We'll see. For how much longer? It could be an interesting offseason or a boring offseason for the Knicks. We'll find out. Appreciate you having me on as always, brother. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Yes, sir. And thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back in a couple of days, probably Thursday, in the aftermath of Game 5 in Oklahoma City for the next episode of Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.